Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Later in the program today, we'll remember the Utah Shamrocks. That's a women's fast-pitch softball team. They played in the same era as baseball teams featured in the movie A League of Their Own. Well, there are stories from Wilma Hunsaker, Donna Paul, and Fern Gardner, who were on those teams. And at the end of the program, we'll talk about the Medicaid security breach. We'll be talking with Utah's data security ombudsman, Sheila Walsh McDonald, about a Data Breach Solutions Center tour, giving information to people whose information may have been compromised. And that tour is in Logan today and various other areas through the next couple of weeks. That's coming up. Right now, we're going to review the Kids Count data book. It's released last week. It shows that the number of Utah children living in poverty has increased by 45%. 11% of Utah's children living in poverty in 2005, up to 16% in 2010. Utah did poorly in several economic areas, did well in some areas, ranked third in the nation in family and community, for example, but some problems there to talk about. And we'll talk about problems facing families in poverty. We'll also explore policy solutions. And we bring in Karen Crompton, who's CEO of Voices for Utah's Children. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Also with Voices for Utah Children, Terry Haven, who's Kids Count director there. I'm not sure your exact title, Terry Haven, but you're involved with Kids Count.
Right. I am the director of the program for Voices for Utah Children.
And we bring in as well Representative Rebecca Chavez-Hauck from the Utah Legislature. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let me start with you, Karen Crompton. Tell us just briefly what Voices for Utah Children is.
Well, Voices for Utah Children was founded in 1985 by Norma Matheson and Irene Fisher, two strong, passionate women when it comes to children's issues. They did not feel that children had a voice in policy discussions and thought that this organization could become that. We are a statewide issue, multi-issue organization. We work in the areas of early care and education, health care, child safety, and family economic security.
And Terry Haven, the Kids Count data book, this is from the Annie Casey Foundation, right? Tell us a little bit about what this is. This comes out how often?
It comes out every year. The Casey Foundation has been putting these books out for about 23 years. And the basic premise is, in order to affect good policy for change and to know what we should be doing for children and families, we really need to know what's going on with children and families. And so they began collecting data on what is going on with kids around the nation and in each state. And each year around this time, they put out this book, which ranks all the states in an overall rank and then also in four domain areas. So this year, we started looking at economic well-being, education, family and community, and health, and we can rank our state compared to all the other states in all four of those areas.
Representative Chavez-Hauck, I'm sure you take a look at these books and probably are looking at policy implications. We'll get into that a little bit later. Just your general reaction to the report this year.
Well, you know, it continues to dishearten me that we have challenges in terms of providing everything for our children. I think oftentimes you'll hear my colleagues and I talk at length about how we care about families, how we care about kids, that we want to keep our children safe. We want to give them a good opportunity in terms of a rigorous academic public ed experience. But then when we look at the numbers and we look at the data, sometimes when it comes to our kids, we may not be the best managed state, as is often espoused by many of my colleagues. So, you know, it is disheartening that we continue to have challenges in some of these areas. And I think that we just need to put more effort and more energy into walking the talk.
Karen Crompton, what jumps out at you this year's report especially?
Well, the big poverty number increase is probably the most concerning. You know, in many ways, Utah is a wonderful place for kids and families, but when we see the kind of increase, nearly a 50% increase from the previous report, that really is alarming. You know, we've seen really severe declines in the economic well-being of families and their children during this recession. And while the economy is slowly improving and maybe a little faster here in Utah than other places, you know, change can't come soon enough for those kids whose exposure to economic hardship has deepened or been prolonged. We know that poverty has long-lasting consequences that reduce the chances of future success. So this is really an issue that we need to take a look at. There are things that can be done. You know, Great Britain has made a commitment to reducing child poverty by half in the next generation. It would be wonderful if we would take on something comparable.
Terry Haven, wanted to ask you what jumps out at you the most. Do you agree that some of the cause for this big jump is the recession?
A lot of it is, I think, yes. And as Karen said, the issue around poverty for me is that as we collect all of this data, and we collect 16 indicators of child well-being in this report involving all four of those domains, and every single one of those indicators is affected by poverty. So when I see a state that's trending like ours where we've got a 45% increase in poverty and we've got 135,000 children living in poverty and we're seeing a slow, steady rise in that number, what my concern is how is that going to affect everything else that we look at? How is that going to affect children without insurance and children, you know, and teen deaths and you know, fourth graders who aren't reading on grade level? Because we know all of these issues are affected by poverty. So, for example, fourth graders who are not reading proficiently is one of the indicators we track. And we know that low-income children don't do as well as their peers as they get to kindergarten. So policies that affect that kind of educational disparity are really crucial. So children going to a quality preschool for low-income families is a crucial aspect of making sure those children close the achievement gap and are with their peers and graduate from high school and do all the things that we know they need to do to become successful. So, again, poverty is a huge issue. It affects everything else we look at.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the recently released Kids Count data book. It shows that the number of Utah children living in poverty has increased from 2005 to 2010 by 45%. Some areas Utah's doing well in, others we've gone backwards in. And we're talking about childhood poverty with Representative Rebecca Chavez-Hauck and with Karen Crompton and Terry Haven of Voices for Utah Children. You're welcome to join this conversation. If you have a personal experience or someone you know, perhaps a policy solution, or want to take issue with policy solutions that have been proposed, the number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. Or you can email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com, and the number is 1-800-826-1495. Terry Haven, I wonder if you could expand on, I guess this is a pervasive thing, if a child is living in poverty, a household that's in poverty, it has a cascading effect, does it not? There are many other things that are affected.
Right. We know the research shows us that children living in poverty have a host of negative outcomes. They're more apt to fall into these negative outcomes, things like living in poverty themselves when they become adults, not graduating from high school, becoming a teen parent, all of those kinds of things that you know, we don't want them to do. So making sure that we deal with those issues and helping families pull out of poverty is crucial to helping children succeed.
Mm-hmm. Representative Chavez-Hauck, you know, there are a host of things covered in the report, high housing cost burden, that grew for Utah, teens not in school and not working, that increased, fourth graders not proficient in reading, whole host of things depressingly increased. How do you prioritize this in terms of what you might take to the legislature?
Well, I know it's always challenging, and oftentimes my colleagues will say that at the legislature we pick winners and we pick losers, but I don't see why we can't look towards more win-win solutions. If I could, you know, reflect on some of the things that you've talked about, you know, before in the past few minutes, one of the challenges that we have as legislators is we have a tendency to silo some of these issues without realizing the symbiosis that connects all of the issues that we deal with as legislators. Whether it's an issue, for example, the Economic Development Task Force of the legislature had a presentation by Dr. Schaefer from the U of U School of Business, who mentioned to us and tried to bring forward the point that economic growth does not necessarily lead to an improvement in the standard of living for residents. Sometimes we keep talking about how we, as Utah, really weathered this recession fairly well, and in general numbers and in terms of outputs, we did, but our standard of living and individual income did not come up. And at some point, we get to a point of diminishing returns, and even though we've done really well in some sectors, you see it manifesting itself in terms of what people are bringing home on a daily basis in terms of income. Now, that also connects to issues related to health and safety and how we as legislators look at those topics. I find it oftentimes very frustrating that, I have colleagues right now that are saying that they don't want us to move forward with the Medicaid expansion that's presented through the Affordable Care Act. And one of my colleagues said, well, we should instead be investing that money in education. Yes, I'd love to see us, invest more in education, but when we've got the largest number of enrollees in Medicaid who are children, even though very efficiently so, how we take care of those kids, you can't bifurcate these decisions. We have to realize that a kid that comes to school with a dental abscess or is ill or is not getting the right amount of health care, that affects how well they do in school. Whether mom and dad have a good standard of living, a good living wage at their job, that affects how well they do in school. Our largest challenge is we've got to stop bifurcating these issues and siloing how we look at all the different things that we deal with in the legislature and understand that they connect together and realize that a decision, for example, to fund pre-K effectively and expand that option for our Utah families does in the end affect so many different things.
Hmm. I'm sure you've heard the following argument from some colleagues at the legislature. We don't want to increase the tax burden. If we increase some of these programs, we'll increase the tax burden. Let's concentrate on jobs, and that will make everything else better. Wonder what your response is.
And again, we've discussed that. We're starting to have that discussion in the Economic Development Task Force, for example. But as I just presented, even when we have really great outputs from our industries and from the private sector, that always doesn't manifest itself in money in workers' pockets, in the pockets of our families. So, and I think that we could look at the way we do our taxation. For example, we are of severance tax rates related to extractive industries. If you look at states that surround us, Wyoming and Idaho and Nevada, their severance tax rates are much higher on extractive industries than they are in Utah. And that's what they use to fund education. So I think there are ways that we can look in a very targeted way at certain areas of taxation and find ways to improve what revenues we bring in that could benefit our kids. This doesn't mean that we have to increase taxes across the board on our hardworking families in Utah, but there are things that we can look at very methodically and look at different ways that we tax that would improve upon our revenue base and not be so onerous to our average folks.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the Kids Count data book. The news overall was not good for Utah, although Utah ranks 10th and 13th and kind of in the upper tier of states in many of these areas, 27th in education. The increase from 11 to 16% from 2005 to 2010 is somewhat alarming, an increase of 45%. We're talking about that. Children living in poverty. With Rebecca Chavez-Hauck, state representative, also with Karen Crompton and Terry Haven with Voices for Utah Children. And you're welcome to join the conversation at 1-800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, or email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. Karen Crompton, you look at all of these factors, and I wonder how worried you think we should be. That's almost a 50% increase in at least the economic factors there, children living in poverty. The recession apparently has hit families hard. How worried should we be?
I think it's a canary in the coal mine for us.
You know, we don't have so many children living in poverty that we can't begin to address it. We don't have deep pockets of inner-city poverty like many states do. This is truly something we could get our arms around. And while we may not be able to solve poverty this year, next year, there are certainly things we can do to improve the conditions and enhance the possibility of outcomes for kids. And some of those have been mentioned. Certainly health, and there's a piece we could do a whole lot better on right away. Utah ranks 45th in the number of percent of uninsured children in our country. The majority of those kids are already eligible for Medicaid and CHIP, not even thinking ahead to the Affordable Care Act, but just today, over half are likely eligible but not enrolled. We need to do more to connect those kids to coverage. We know it improves their school performance, gives them a better shot at life. And again, education, starting early. Kids who start behind stay behind. It's a relatively small investment at the front end, but as we get further down the road and encounter additional problems, including dropout rates, not completing college, those costs become much more expensive to us. And if we want to ensure that the next generation is prepared to compete in a global economy that is increasingly technology-driven and dependent on a well-educated workforce, then we need to act, and that means acting early.
And by early, are you talking about preschool?
Talking about preschool. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other programs, home visitation programs, that can help families as well. But preschool is just such an opportunity. You know, we have some great examples here in Utah in the Granite School District, which has a high-quality preschool program for at-risk kids. When they enter that program, many of them are testing way, way below their counterparts and would actually qualify for special ed. But after going through preschool, and now we've tracked them through third grade for four different groups of kids, they have closed the achievement gap. They are performing at or above their peers on math and language tests, which also means we have less remediation costs. So we close the achievement gap, we save money. That's an example of a win-win solution like Rebecca was talking about.
Let me turn to Terry Haven. You're quoted in the Salt Lake Tribune article with a couple of policy suggestions. One of those would be to enact a state earned income tax credit like the federal government has.
Right. We know that the earned income tax credit, or the EITC, that the federal government has instituted is a proven way of pulling families out of poverty. It's basically you get money back from the government because you're not making enough money. So we've been trying to institute a state EITC for several years. We think that it would, again, you know, kind of add on to the federal EITC and help more families and help them rise out of poverty. There's information around one of the things I talked about in terms of health insurance, and as Karen said, we're 45th in the nation in the percent of children without health insurance. And while we've improved a little bit, we're still above the nation in terms of the percentage of children who don't have health insurance. We could make things easier for them, removing the asset test for children in Medicaid, making, you know, a continuous eligibility for Medicaid. There's so many kinds of policies that if we're really concerned and really want to make some changes that could make positive differences for our families, you know, we have some proven programs at work. We just need to get them through.
We do have a caller. Let's go to Mary in Logan. Mary, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm so glad you have the people from Utah Children there today, because if anyone wants to contribute funds to a worthwhile organization that benefits all children, because if you take care of those that are disadvantaged, we all benefit from that, that this is the organization to give some money to, donations to. But also, I'd like to say, having been in the early childhood and education field all the way up to grade 12 for many, many, many years, I would like to say these are same issues that we all were working on in the late 90s. And I can remember at that time when I was running for, well, I wasn't running yet for an office, but I remember giving information to one of our legislators, and he said to me, "Well, don't give it to me because I don't have time to read it." And so I've always kept that in the back of my mind, and maybe if they read it and if they went into a school all day, regardless of the grade level, and especially early childhood, preschool, they might get the idea real quickly about what it's about, because I don't think that many of them do know what it's about. And as with regard to preschool, I would also encourage people to think about infant toddler care, and because that's where all the brain development is taking place, and hard wiring is going on for future life of that baby. And so really it's about pay me now or pay me later. And so if you don't think the young children are worth it, and, oh, well, they'll make it type thing. Well, yes, they make it. But then, as some of your presenters indicated, they go on and have all kinds of other problems as well. And my last point is there's a huge connection between health and education, and I totally agree with that. Thank you very much. It's a matter of long-term vision and no bifurcating. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Appreciate you calling. And she called 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. You can as well if you have a comment. We're talking about childhood poverty and responding to the Kids Count data book, which shows that children living in poverty in Utah has increased by 45% from 2005 to 2010. I don't know. Any of our guests here to have any comment to what Mary said?
Well, this is Karen. Clearly, Mary's had some experience in dealing with these areas. I was struck by her comment about giving some information to an elected official who said, "I don't have time to read it." You know, we're obviously in an election season, and one of the things we're working on is to make sure candidates talk about kids' issues. We often see candidates in photo ops with kids, kissing babies, hugging children, but too often we don't even have a discussion about these issues. So we are encouraging candidates to make it part of their campaigns, include it in their websites. We've met with media and reporters who are covering the campaigns and encourage them to ask the tough questions of candidates. You know, kids don't vote. They don't have super PACs for sure. They need all of us to be out there speaking up for them and being strong advocates. As Rebecca mentioned, we talk a lot about economic development, and we look at that in terms of, you know, the need to invest in infrastructure and that. Unfortunately, sometimes when we talk about kids, it's in the sense of it's charity or it's welfare, but they are really an investment and in infrastructure of our future. So that's how we need to be talking about kids. They are the most important economic development that we can undertake.
Coming down to the end of this segment, let me have Terry Haven give us any last thoughts, and then we'll give the last word to Representative Chavez Houck.
Well, I guess one of the things I'd really like to get across is that the Casey Foundation puts this data out, and we put our own data book out earlier in the spring that has county-level information. The main focus of all this data is use it to figure out what are the problems and what we need to do. You cannot affect good policy change for kids on hearsay, on political rhetoric, on myths. You need to know what's going on with kids in your state, where are the problem areas, and where do we need to concentrate. And that's really the focus of the data and why we need the data.
Representative Chavez Houck, do you think there are any problem areas outlined in this data book where the legislature maybe is more especially inclined to act in the coming session?
Well, I think when it comes especially to areas of safety and education that there is an affinity by my colleagues. But, you know, the one thing that I would encourage individuals to do is to take a look at our records. I mean, during the campaign season, everybody's going to talk about how wonderful, you know, they are about supporting children's issues and children's concerns. But look at how we've voted on these issues. Voices for Utah Children tracks many of the bills that are of areas of concern for their organization and for young people in our community. So I would encourage individuals to take a look at those voting records, take a look at some very key bills, i.e. the sex education bill, the suicide prevention bill, how people voted in terms of appropriations for education, how they voted on the Common Core curricula issues, how they voted on pre-K, and hold our feet to the fire. If people voted against those bills or they didn't vote in a way that is supporting children, ask them why.
We will leave it there. We have been talking about the Kids Count data book. The number of Utah children living in poverty has increased by 45% from 2005 to 2010. Worth a look. The Kids Count data book and more information, I'm sure, can be had at the website of Voices for Utah Children. We'll be talking with the CEO, Karen Crompton. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Terry Haven, who works with Kids Count for Voices for Utah Children. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Representative Rebecca Chavez-Hauck has been with us. Thanks.
Thank you.
And coming up at the end of the program, we'll be talking a bit about the Medicaid data breach that we all have heard about. Some of you may have had your information compromised. There are workshops being given by Utah's data security ombudsman, Sheila Walsh McDonald, and the workshop for Logan is happening this afternoon, and then it's going to go around the state. And we'll have information on that at the end of the program. Following Steve Eaton commentary, we're going to talk about women's fast-pitch softball. This is in the same era, the 1940s or so, as the baseball teams, women's baseball teams, featured in the movie A League of Their Own. There was recently a remembrance in Salt Lake City. Gina Davis from the movie was involved, and members of the team, the Utah Shamrocks, which were involved in that team, were there. We're going to talk with three members of the Utah Shamrocks following the break.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by USU's Emma Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services, ranked in the top 2% of graduate schools of education with degrees that include communicative disorders and deaf education. More is at cehs.usu.edu.
Baby face with those baby blue eyes and that baby bleach blonde hair. Baby nose and baby fingers spreading sunshine everywhere you go.
I get credit for discovering Sarah Olson.
Deseret News columnist Steve Eaton.
Sarah Olson is a singer and songwriter who lives in an undiscovered town called Young Ward in Cache Valley. I discovered her last spring sitting on a stool in the middle of a sidewalk at Utah State University. She had a guitar and was singing as part of some outdoor celebration USU was hosting. She stopped me in my tracks. She has the most pure, wonderful voice I've heard in a long time, maybe ever. I don't drink wine, but I want to describe it as being sweet as wine. For some reason, complimenting someone by saying their voice is sweet as root beer doesn't sound the same. I've often wondered if I would have recognized the talent the Beatles had if I just came across them before they were famous, playing their music in the Cavern in Liverpool. Would I have stopped and taken in the tunes, or would I have just turned up my iPod and guzzled my root beer? I use the Beatles as an example here because I have sort of a deep connection to them. If I had been born in a different place and time and had been given talent, looks, determination, and charisma, I could have been one of the Beatles. I was that close to being part of the Fab Five. I have since heard Sarah Olson perform two more times. I bought all the music she's recorded. She performed at Summerfest in Logan, which is a peaceful, crowded art festival that takes place in the center of town around the Tabernacle. It's a mellow, slow-moving event that makes you feel like you've stepped into a Norman Rockwell painting. I also saw her sing at another event called Art on the Lawn in North Logan. Each time, I've been stunned to see people just wandering by as she performed. It appeared the amazing music floating in the summer air wasn't even registering, but just becoming part of the atmosphere of it all. She invests heart and soul in her very personal music, and for some people, apparently, when they hear it live, it's just nice background. It's too bad that music has to make it into our headphones before we'll pay any attention to it. I guess she shouldn't feel too bad. Recently, I went and saw Ringo Starr perform. When the show started, right on time, there were still thousands of people wandering in to find their seats. Ringo Starr and his all-star band were performing, and there must have been 5,000 people who just wandered in late. All the aging hippies were there showing proper respect, but many others seemed clueless. I felt like standing up and apologizing to the band and marching the audience back into the parking lot and explaining to everyone that there is only one Ringo Starr of Beatles fame and that's the very guy they're disrespecting. I would ask them how they would feel if they were one of the all-stars and got treated like that. Then I would make everyone go back to their seats, apologizing one by one, with heads bowed in shame, to Ringo and the other guys in the band. No one would be allowed to get nachos first. If they had to go potty, they would just have to wait until after Ringo and the other guys were done. I had a similar experience at a Jackson Browne concert with a disrespectful audience, and I got a chance to meet Jackson after the concert. I actually apologized for the audience not showing proper respect. I felt like saying, I thought I had raised them better than that. Sarah also deserves more respect. I get the ball rolling by becoming an official Sarah Olsen groupie, but I'm not sure she'd appreciate that. Her concerts are usually free and nearby, so they're easy to go to. But I worry I'm not the kind of person she wants front and center in her concerts. Old fat guys don't help young singers develop their brand position very well. I have used my Chris Farley charisma to my advantage in the past by going to snowboarding shops and hanging around, greeting everyone until they paid me to leave. It's good money if your ego can take it. My ego has been prepared for such things. I was discovered once myself. I was a student at BYU, and my hair had grown just a little longer than was allowed there. Someone picked me out of a crowd and asked me to go to a photo shoot they were doing in the building. They said I'd be perfect for the role they needed me to play. I wasn't overweight back then, and yet I wasn't often mistaken for a model either. I was quite flattered. It turned out they were taking pictures for an EMT manual, and they wanted to have a photo page demonstrating how to tie up and gag dangerous, mentally imbalanced, verbally combative people. They tied me up and gagged me as the photographer took pictures. All I had to do was act naturally, as Ringo Starr would say. That's another thing I like about Sarah. She has never once suggested I be gagged and tied up. She even let me interview her once. She was so kind and respectful. To be completely truthful, Sarah has already been discovered by a few other people. Russ Dixon, who is an amazing photographer and a singer in the band Colors, discovered her too. He helped her get her first CD just another day recorded. But I'm the first person who writes columns that upset, trouble, and confuse people who has discovered her. And I want that on the record. I'm here to say that Sarah Olsen is the best female singer, songwriter in Cache Valley, maybe Utah, possibly the universe. I want credit for discovering her. And unless you're an EMT who knows how to tie up and gag a verbally combative person, I think you should just let me have my opinion. You'll discover it's for the best. Sarah Olsen will be performing at a free concert at the Farmers Market in Logan on August 18th at 11 a.m. You can learn more about her music and concert by going to saraholsenmusic.com. This is Steve Eaton.
Baby face, how I miss those baby kisses and those baby sunshine days. La la la.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Colgan Water of Cache Valley, family-owned and operated for more than 58 years, providing on-demand, high-purity bottled water for cooking and drinking. Hey Colgan Man, the service from the man in blue, online at ColganUtah.com.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and right now we're going to learn about the Utah Shamrocks. This is the women's fast-pitch softball team, played in the same era as the women's baseball teams featured in A League of Their Own, a movie that a lot of us have seen. In fact, Gina Davis from the movie was in Salt Lake City on Friday for a promotion for the Salt Lake Bees, and they were celebrating the 20th anniversary of the movie, and they featured some members of the Utah Shamrocks. That team began in 1935. A group of women working for Auerbach's department store in Salt Lake City formed a basketball team that later became the Shamrocks softball team, and they played through the 40s. 50s was the golden age. And we have with us on the line Wilma Hunsaker, who lives in Smithfield. Welcome to the program. Appreciate you joining us today. Donna Paul from South Weber also joins us. Thank you for joining us. And Fern Gardner from St. George. And ladies, are you there?
Yes. Okay.
This is Donna, and I'm here.
All right. Very good. Just want to make sure the phone line works. Let me start with you, Donna Paul. When did you play for the Utah Shamrocks?
I played for the Shamrock team themselves from 49 until 67 when I quit. So I played a long time.
You must have loved it.
I did love it.
Yeah. And Fern Gardner, when did you play for the Shamrocks?
I played from 51 to about 71.
All right. Good long careers. You must have all enjoyed this. Wilma Hunsaker, when did you play?
I played for about 11 years with them.
All right. Donna Paul, this was a team, put together. The name came from the founder of the team, right? Dennis Murphy?
Yes, that's true.
He's Irish, and so he wanted to call it by, I guess, an Irish name, the Shamrock. So you wore green, obviously, I would think.
Yes.
So tell us about the kind of softball played here. This was fast pitch, and I understand it. This was all out, very competitive.
It was fast pitch and very competitive, and we had a great time.
I should have asked each of you what position you played. Donna Paul, what position did you play?
Well, I ended up playing first base, so I played first base longer than any other position. Mm-hmm. But I played infield.
Wilma Hunsaker.
I was a fastball pitcher.
Oh, you're a pitcher. Very
yes.
Important. And Fern Gardner.
I played outfield and pitched.
Yeah. I wonder, when the movie came out, A League of Their Own, this is a baseball versus fast-pitch softball, but it would have been many similarities. What did you think of the movie? Did it bring up some memories for you?
Well, they sent me, they were looking for girls all over the United States, I guess, to play in that league. But it was hardball. It was throwing overhand. They sent me a contract, but I didn't take that because I'm a softball pitcher. And so when softball came along, I went for softball.
Mm-hmm. So they were actually looking for, I guess, women who had played in those kinds of leagues.
Right. That's what they were looking for. And yeah. They had some wonderful players there.
Yeah. Donna Paul, did that bring up memories when the original movie came out?
Well, yes, but as Wilma mentioned, it was different. You know, baseball's different than softball, but yes, it was interesting and enjoyed the movie very much.
Mm. Fern Gardner, there's a quote here in the Salt Lake Tribune article. This is from the catcher, Lugene Nelson. The team's goal was twofold, to leave their fans with the impression that the Shamrocks were young ladies on and off the field, and to be strong and determined players. I guess that comes from the team yearbook. I guess those were the goals, were they?
Yes.
I guess that's why they put us in skirts.
I can't think of one person on there that I wasn't proud to know and be with.
Yeah.
They were great girls.
And that's you played in skirts. I guess that was you wanted to show people.
No, we had shorts.
You had shorts? Okay.
Uh-huh.
But you wanted to show people you were good young ladies on and off the field.
Yes. Yes, and we did. I don't know of anyone that would have embarrassed anyone. They're good people. Hmm. Good people.
Now, for this, for the 20th anniversary of the League of Their Own and for this event, several of you, I guess, went to this event on Friday. Donna Paul, I guess you were there?
Yes, I was there.
How was the event?
It was great. It was a good experience and saw some of our teammates and had a good crowd there. It was a great experience.
Hmm. Good reaction from the crowd?
Yes,
to the Shamrocks? Yeah. All three of you must have loved sports. And there were fewer opportunities for women, right, back then to get into sports?
Hey, it was wonderful. It was amazing how well the Shamrock team got along together. We were all young. And, of course, now we're all old, and I don't think a lot of the people would still remember. They're all older than us, and maybe they don't remember the Shamrocks, but the Shamrocks were a great team. When I first played with the Shamrocks, they had been the leading team in the state of Utah for 15 years. And a little old team from Hillfield beat them and took the championship away from them. But then the next year they took it back. And I don't remember them ever losing after that again in the state of Utah. And we played in many national contests. And always fared well there, too. We had a very strong defensive team, very strong. And I think part of that was because we all depended on each other.
Hmm.
We were a great team.
So close-knit team.
Pardon?
A close-knit team.
I'm sorry, I still didn't understand.
I'm sorry, you were a close-knit team. You were unified.
Very close-knit. We
yes.
still are. Mm-hmm. We still see each other not as often as we'd like to, maybe, but we still see each other when we can.
Hmm.
Still have many fond memories of each one of the girls in that team.
I understand you traveled California, Hawaii, Canada, a lot of travel.
We had road trips where it would take two or three weeks once a summer, and we would go between California, Arizona, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and then they in turn would come and play us in Utah. So we had a wonderful league. We were called the Western Girls Softball League. And it was a good league, very, very close-knit family team. I still count a lot of these girls my dear friends.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the Utah Shamrocks. This was a legendary fast pitch softball team. Started up in the 30s, went through the 40s, 50s, into the at least some of the women I'm talking to played up into the early 70s. Wilma Hunsaker from Smithfield, Donna Paul from South Weber, and Fern Gardner from St. George, my guests. If you'd like to join this conversation, you're certainly welcome to do so at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or you can email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. Fern Gardner, what did your parents think about this? Was this a good, acceptable activity, or did they look askance at you joining a softball team?
No, it was very acceptable. I had four older brothers that played baseball, and my older sister also played for the Shamrocks. So sports was a family affair at our place.
Donna Paul, what do you have a favorite memory from those times?
Well, you know, I played on the team with four other sisters, but I played longer than any of them, and I guess the probably one memory we were up in playing up in the Oregon area. And we played for 21 innings that game. It was the longest game ever played. Played 21 innings before we got out of that. And we've been to just many, like as mentioned, many tournaments, contests, exhibition games. It was just a great lot of fun.
Hmm. Wilma Hunsaker, same question to you. Favorite memories from those times?
Oh, I have two. I have two games that will stand forever in my memory. The one was what Donna just talked about. We had a girl on third base, and all we had to do is get her home, and we'd have been the champions of the United States of America. And I saw we have a picture of the runner on third base sliding into home, and they tagged her out by about a foot.
Oh, no.
We'd have been the number one team in the United States.
Oh.
The other was in 1947 when they were celebrating Pioneer Day, and they contracted with a team, the leading team in the United States of America came here and played us, little old Shamrocks. And we played on Dirk's Field. It was called Dirk's Field then. And we played 13 innings, and they called the game because of curfew. The score, nothing. They didn't score on us, but we couldn't score on them. And that will always stand in my memory as what a great defensive team we had.
Hmm.
Fern, the Shamrocks were great.
Fern Gardner, what are your favorite memories?
Probably the 21 innings I pitched at Port Angeles, Washington. Hmm. And having the Ray Bestis Breakettes, who were ranked in the number one in the country, coming to White Park and beating them 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Those two games I distinctly remember.
Yeah. I understand on the trips you received $3 a day to live on.
Yep.
Was it now
a lot of money.
little different money then, but still $3 wasn't a whole lot.
It went a lot further.
Mm-hmm. Overall, did you, I guess you had to fit this with family and jobs?
Yes, we had to make arrangements. I had to, and my mother would tend my children while I went on the trip.
Mm-hmm. But your families generally were supportive of you doing this.
Oh, very.
Yeah. Taking lessons forward, you always hear about lessons you can learn from sports. Do you have lessons that you take from sports that you taught your children and so forth?
I think the lesson I learned is that you can't always win. You can't always be the best because there'll be come that'll be a little better. I learned that. When you lose, you have to be a better loser. Well, no, I think you have to be a better winner because you don't brag about it. You take it as a gift, and then if you're a bad loser, you have to go just the other way and smile, even though you might be cussing a little under your breath.
Yeah, it's more painful, but maybe you learn more from
you
losing.
Do. You learn. Yeah. You learn you can't always win. There'll always come someone that'll be a little bit better than you are, mm-hmm. and so you have to keep trying to improve yourself.
Imagine some of the best things you take from this are the relationships among the team members. You it sounds like a lot of you keep in touch.
Now yeah, say fine. That again.
You all keep in touch, it seems like.
Not as much now as we used to. Because we have families now, and we have things we have to do. But, yes, we do keep in touch.
Hmm. We're just coming down to the end of our time together. I maybe want each of you to have a last word. Maybe start this with Fern Gardner from St. George. Anything that you'd especially like people to know about the Utah Shamrocks?
Well, I think we were better than people would even imagine nowadays. And the people really played together. It was just a united team and a united effort, and I learned many lessons from playing this Shamrocks, and one of them was to learn to get along with people no matter what.
Wilma Hunsaker from Smithfield, what would you like people to know?
How much I appreciated the support that the fans gave us in Utah. We used to bring lots of people out. They fill the bleachers. They don't do that anymore. Now it's all college, but in that day, I would like to say that the fans we had were wonderful and they were supportive, and every girl that I can't remember one girl that I ever played with that I didn't grow to respect and love as a dear friend.
And Donna Paul from South Weaver will give you the last word. What would you like people to know about the Shamrocks?
Well, I would just have to say amen to both what Fern has said and Wilma. It's just the camaraderie that we shared, the good times, the wins, even the losses. But we were all up there, and we enjoyed each other, and we had a good time. And we traveled lots and lots of miles, six in a car, and two cars usually, and six in each car, and I don't even remember air conditioning in those days, so we just had great fun and learned to love each other and get along and had a good time.
And the Utah Shamrocks were a fast-pitched women's softball team, founded in the 1930s, played up into the 1970s, at least the women I've been talking to. They were honored, Utah Shamrocks were, at a Salt Lake Bees game on Friday. Featured Gina Davis from the movie A League of Their Own as well. I've been talking with Donna Paul from South Weber, Wilma Hunsaker from Smithfield, and Fern Gardner from St. George. Thanks to you all. Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Tom.
And coming up following a brief break, we're going to end the program by letting you know some workshops. If you fear that you've lost data during that Medicaid data breach that we've all been hearing about, there are some workshops. The one in Logan is today. We're going to be talking about that following this brief break.
Thank you. Hi, this is Blair Larson, host of Fresh Folk. On the show this week, I feature the Kerrville New Folk finalist, Ernest Troost, and the return of the talented Barbara Kessler. I'll also play songs from new albums by The Waymores, Anais Mitchell, and Mercedes Mill, to name just a few. Join me this Saturday at 8 p.m. for Fresh Folk on Utah Public Radio.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crumb Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
We conclude the program just a couple of minutes here to tell you about something called the Utah Department of Health's Data Breach Solution Center Tour, a series of workshops throughout the state. The workshop for the Logan area is happening today, 4 to 7 p.m. at the Bear River Health Department Environmental Health Building. Then on Wednesday in Ogden, Thursday in Clearfield, Vernal's is on Monday, and the list goes on. And we bring in Utah's Data Security Ombudsman, Sheila Welch McDonald. Thanks for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
So tell us what people can expect if they attend one of these workshops. I guess, why should people come?
Well, we have many breach victims who have not yet signed up for the credit monitoring. And so we're making this outreach effort to communities throughout Utah to encourage people to come. And we, if they need assistance in signing up, we'll be happy to do that for the credit monitoring, which also gives them theft resolution services as well as identity theft insurance. And we just feel it's important that people be proactive and sign up for these services. In truth, it takes about 10 minutes to complete the process.
Now, if my data was compromised, would I have received something from your office?
We are really focusing on those who had their Social Security numbers breached. And yes, every individual who had their Social Security number breached should have received a letter from the Utah Department of Health and Technology Services indicating that the breach had occurred and instructions on how to activate the Experian products, the credit monitoring services that the state is offering free of charge.
So what you want people to do is come in, take 10 minutes, and sign up for services that are free and available to them.
Absolutely. And many people still have questions about the breach. They have questions about what the package includes. They want to understand how their data was compromised. And I, as the ombudsman, will also be available to answer many of their questions and have a one-on-one meeting. It's more of a workshop data solution opportunity for local residents, but there is that opportunity to come in and talk to myself and some staff and maybe get answers to questions that they may have.
So the workshop in Logan is today, 4 to 7 p.m., Bear River Health Department, Environmental Health Building. And the workshops are coming up for Ogden, Clearfield, Vernal, Provo, Price, Richfield, and St. George. Where is a good place to go to get information?
We have a wonderful website, www.health.utah.gov/databreach, which has the full schedule of our events that are forthcoming and information on just what happened and what happens, what people can do if they've lost their letter or misplaced their letter and how to get a new letter. But if people do not have their letters, they can come in tonight, we can give them their activation codes and help them enroll, and we will resend them a letter. So that's another good reason to come.
All right, and you can go to that website, or you can go to upr.org, and we have a link to that website. Utah's Data Security Ombudsman, Sheila Welch McDonald, has been on with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening to Access Utah.